This is the Brant and Sherry podcast. To find out more about the radio show and Brant's new book called Unoffendable, just go to BrantHanson.com.
This is so great. If you have an iPhone or a Droid, any kind of smartphone, you can, with just a few tools and a little bit of time.
Oh, boy.
What?
The tools. What? It's the tools, but go ahead.
You can convert it into a microscope. How awesome is that?
Will it still be functioning as a phone?
No.
Okay.
No, but you'll have a microscope. That is the coolest thing.
Or you can just go out and buy a microscope and still keep your phone.
Anyway, you can make your phone into a microscope, and that is pretty awesome.
Okay.
I have the plans. Maybe we can agree on something. I think we can. And that something is this. Your feelings don't trump the truth. For example, you can be like, I feel that the Golden State Warriors won the NBA championship last year. Well, actually, they didn't. I can't remember who did. Who did?
But we know they didn't.
This is going to derail the whole point I was going to make because I can't remember.
The point is, it's not the truth.
It was. Right? Yeah, that was the whole point.
Well,
but now I'm stuck.
We're not going to be able to move on.
No, we're not. Never mind.
Forget it.
You tried.
I did. I had a really good point.
I believe you did. I felt it.
Who won last year? It was not the Heat. So, the Spurs.
Okay.
Anyway, the Spurs won the championship.
That's not acceptable.
Okay, no. All right. Coming up, I will explain what my point was going to be. It's going to be really, really good. Yeah. With the music and everything.
This
it's going to
be
so awesome.
This is the best radio show
ever.
Yeah, it is. Ever.
It's an absolute disaster. Okay, I got sidetracked, but here is my point. Your feelings don't trump reality. So, you can feel that the Warriors won the NBA championship last year. It doesn't change reality. The Spurs did. We could all feel something. It doesn't change the truth. The truth is the truth is the truth. I got a note from somebody who says he feels like a failure. Dude, I feel like a failure all the time. In fact, I have my entire life. I mean, it comes and goes, but during the course of my entire life, I've always battled feeling like, Brant, you're a failure. You're a failure. You're a failure.
Even as a child, you
Even
said.
As a child.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've always felt this way. Sometimes it goes along with Asperger's syndrome, I've heard, which I have. The other day I was feeling it. I think it was Sunday. It felt like a complete failure. Like, why am I even on the radio? What? You know what, though? It's not true. The feelings don't change the truth. You're not a failure. And here's the other thing, too. If God looks at me and he does not see a failure, instead he looks at what Jesus has done on my behalf, who am I to say, I'm going to upend what you think, what I think is more important than what God thinks. If God's okay with me, he loves me, wouldn't it be incredibly self-centered of me to go, no, I'm a failure. My opinion trumps God's. No, it doesn't. So you know what? I just kind of stopped thinking about it. I go, well, God's okay with me, and maybe I should just go serve somebody, and I'll get over it. And you know what? It generally works. Hey, my name is Brant. Yesterday, we were talking about nicknames on the show. Sherry, you have a nickname? I
sure,
should know this.
Yes, I do.
What was it? Is it?
It was Pumpkin.
Pumpkin, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And my grandfather, on his deathbed, still, I love you,
oh.
Pumpkin. Always. Oh. He refused to do Sherry.
Good I mean, for him. Well, that's what you are to him.
It is. And my mom and I'm still that to
still
everyone.
Pumpkin.
I am.
Do you not like it?
I don't like it because the reason why they came up with it is my head is gigantic. As a baby, still is. And I had dimples, still do, but no teeth. So Jack-O-Lantern is not a cute baby name, so Pumpkin is what they came
that's
up
what it
with.
Came out
big
of.
Head, deep dimples, no teeth.
Huh. That does put a darker spin on it, doesn't it? What about you, Becca?
The only nickname I have is Becca Boo, which I feel like every Becca gets deemed Becca Boo. A lot of my family still calls me Becca Boo. And I'm 18. But the one that bothers me is some people try and call me Boo Boo. Oh. Like, not Becca Boo, but just Boo Boo. Oh. And I feel like I'm like a scab or something. Like, the little kids are like, oh, I have a Boo Boo. Yeah. That bothers me.
You don't have to take that Boo Boo. You don't. Kathy is on the phone. How did you get the nickname Shorty Pancakes?
It was a nickname given to me by my husband way back when. So it's I don't use it very often when people ask me.
Like
my email.
Is it on your business card?
It's their email. It's Shorty Pancakes.
I know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Shorty Pancakes LLC. I got my Juris Doctorate from Notre Dame in 1994.
Shorty Pancakes PhD. That's awesome.
Dr. Pancakes.
This is really amazing. Guess how much this dude is getting paid for a boxing match? Think about it. Go ahead and guess. Sherry is kind of a person that's not real plugged into sports necessarily, except for football.
How about $1 million?
Floyd Mayweather was getting paid $180 million for one fight. It may last 30 seconds against Manny Pacquiao. $180 million.
How is that even possible?
That's just how much this fight is worth, I guess. He already owns, you know, jets and Maseratis and everything.
I guess so.
He's doing all right. But $180 million. Now ask me if I'd be willing to get in the ring with Manny Pacquiao for $180 million.
Grant, would you be willing
no,
to
No, I would
get
not.
Why?
Because he would pound my head, and my head matters not only to me, but to my wife,
family, sure.
Family.
They've grown to love it.
Yeah, and yeah. $180 million is not enough. It's really not.
Well, you're going to recover.
Not necessarily.
Ideally.
That is not necessarily true, Sherry. It really isn't.
What's the worst?
I wouldn't do it.
Okay, you really would not do it.
No, not, I mean, not if they said you have to, like if I could just take a dive.
As soon
immediately.
As the bell rings, you
soon
just
as the bell rings,
hurl yourself
I hurl
onto
myself
the mat.
Out of the ring. I'm like, well, I guess that's that, but here's $180 million. Yeah, I'd no, I wouldn't I, do it. I
that's shocking to me. Well, you're in good shape.
But my head would, my head would be in danger.
Okay.
Protect my head at all costs. That's all I'm trying to say. So here's the question from Maddie, and again, thanks for the honesty. She says, so I've been feeling really far away from God recently. I've tried praying and reading my Bible, but nothing's changing. Do you have any advice? That's from Maddie. So here's what I wrote back to her. Hey, Maddie, couple thoughts about this. I have felt like this before many times, and sometimes for years. I've thought, maybe I'm sinning too much, and maybe that's the problem. And I had people even questioning whether I was really a Christian at all. But I don't think that was it. I was honestly calling out to God for forgiveness, honestly calling out to Him for some kind of sign or reassurance that He was still there, all that stuff. And you know what? I'm a stronger believer now. It turns out the feelings element of our relationship is a wonderful thing, but faith isn't founded on that. If we're dependent on it, we begin to make mistake for feelings for reality. We're actually called to trust God. You can hear the words trust God or trust Jesus, and they start to lose their meaning after a while, but now that you have no warm, God is here feelings, you really do have to trust Him and what He has promised you. I am with you always, Jesus said. Always. He's with you, whether you feel it or not. I even think now that the loss of the God is close feeling helped me understand Him more, and my faith is more mature. Some of my heroes, the people I admire for their faith, have gone through the same thing, sometimes for decades. This is not a reason for despair. It is a reason to rethink what a relationship with God might look like. Remember, God blesses us in many ways, not just feelings, and, this is really important, God wants us to want Him for Himself, not the stuff He gives us. As a father, I get this. I want my kids to love me, their loving dad, and not just for the fact that I give them stuff like, say, food, a phone, college, or even warm, protected feelings. I want them to love me not because of what they get, because they freely can love someone beside themselves. And that, of course, is real love. If they love me, I'm thrilled. In our relationship with God, valuing His gifts higher than God Himself is actually idolatry. And He's a jealous lover, and He's good. He knows the stuff, even feelings, aren't ultimately what we need. What we need is Him. So be honest with Him and call out to Him. Even be open about your anger or frustration, but trust Him and know that He may be taking you to a place you haven't been before. One last thing. Someone gave me a brief example on this. If I'm in a large room with you and I'm yelling our conversation, you can hear me just fine. But if I whisper, if I just barely whisper, you can only hear me if you come closer. I think there's something to that, and I think there's something maturing about just knowing God is good, being reminded by other people that He's good, and serving people even without the feelings. Okay, one really last thing. Know this, our feelings are untrustworthy anyway. They're dependent on many things that have nothing to do with the subject of our feelings, like am I sleeping, am I exercising, am I drinking too much coffee or not enough? There's many reasons to be suspicious of our feelings, so many factors, so many changes, but God doesn't change. God bless you, Maddie. So the worst advice of all time, I have decided, this is my own top one list of worst advice, and I hear it all the time. It's terrible, and people think it's true. Here it is. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
The worst advice of all time is follow your heart.
That's it, huh?
It's terrible.
So why? Why do you not like
your
that
heart
advice?
Is deceitful.
The Bible
your heart will
that.
Lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trustworthy. You're basically saying follow your feelings.
I've heard people say that. Trust your feelings.
Trust your feelings. Why? Why would I trust my feelings? My feelings deceive me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If I followed my heart, my life would be a disaster right now,
mm-hmm.
a complete disaster. And in fact, the people I know, frankly, who have applied that as their guiding principle, it is a disaster.
Because you're all over the map. It's up and down. There's no consistency.
Right. And your feelings may vanish for, say, your spouse for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you don't act on that. Hopefully you act on what's true, which is I took a vow. That's why you take a vow
mm-hmm.
in front of hundreds of people. If marriage was easy, if your feelings were always going to be there, you wouldn't have 100 some people there to watch you promise, I'm not going to end this.
Right.
It's hard. Follow your heart. You'll be flipping back and forth one day to the next from one thing to like.
That's true.
You can fall in love. That feeling of falling in love, you can do that, and it might take 15 minutes
mm-hmm.
or less.
Well, that's why people say I fell out of love. That usually means you don't really know what it is because it's a commitment. It's not a feeling.
Right. Well, whatever that, if you follow that, you're going to mm-hmm. go from one person to the next. That can happen.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's, and it's not just about romantic relationships. It's a terrible way to live instead of actually love, meaning sacrifice. Sacrifice usually comes without feelings. You do it anyway because you know what's true and what's good and what's noble and what's pure. You think about long term, not short term. Follow your heart just gets people in a horrible, disastrous life. We just were talking about how I think the worst advice ever is follow your heart.
And you know, because that's such a common thought process, specifically in this country, there are people who would object to you saying that that's poor advice.
I know.
So what's the objection? What do you think the objection
would be? The objection would be, well, Brant, we're supposed to pursue our passions. I'm not saying don't pursue your passion. Like if you're really good at art,
mm-hmm.
like don't have anything to do with art.
Mm-hmm.
But so many dumb decisions, foolish decisions are based on how I feel in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm just overwhelmed with this feeling. But your feelings are pliable.
Yes.
It's based on how much sleep you've gotten.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on how much you exercise, what you're eating, different hormonal shifts that we have, men and women.
Yes.
I mean, there's all sorts of dumb decisions you can make to follow your heart for something that turns out to be the most foolish. The thing you should do is seek wisdom
mm-hmm.
and ask God for wisdom.
And then commit to what is right and what is faithful, being faithful. I mean, because think about it as a kid, like, okay, take the trash out. What kid feels like
no
doing
feel.
That?
That's not my heart.
Right.
Oh, that's my passion.
Right.
So bad. Such a bad idea.
Mm.
And it spans all sorts of aspects of our life. But look up in terms of the Bible, if you're going to use it as an authority,
mm-hmm.
and I hope you do, it says the heart is deceitful above all things.
Yeah, it does.
It'll fool you. You'll wind up doing some pretty dumb stuff. And if you have done dumb stuff, you're like, your brain, okay, that's true. It's okay. We all have made mistakes, but let's ask for wisdom and then maybe we can grow and be a blessing to other people. This is pretty exciting indeed. We have something called Survival School on this show. Amanda, Amanda, Becca. I don't know where Amanda came from. Anyway, I'm an expert, Becca, in survival techniques. I will give you a scenario and then you have to figure out what to do. Because I'm always thinking, I'm always like, what's the next move? How do I respond if this happens? Alien invasion, bam.
Mm-hmm.
What happens there?
Right.
What happens if big flood? Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Becca, Amanda.
Always Becca, Amanda, whoever. I've got advice for you. You ready for this?
Okay.
And then he's going to tell you how to handle us.
Yep, I'm always prepared. Let's say...
Oh, I thought I was supposed to figure out.
You are.
To
I'm going to give you a scenario, and I'll give you 5 seconds to figure out what the right answer is. I already know what to do.
Oh, only 5 seconds?
Yeah,
okay.
Because if you're in a real-life emergency situation, you don't get to just, you know, get on your phone and go to Google. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, but 5 seconds is a little short. Okay.
Survival school is coming up. Becca, you're having a good old time with a friend playing racquetball. As you always enjoy doing, and you
what?
Guys go into a racquetball. Let's just say she
okay.
loves racquetball.
Okay.
And you're playing in a racquetball court, and your friend ducks out for a moment, and you turn around, and she's not there anymore. But now you're locked in the racquetball court with a bobcat.
Oh,
a live rabid bobcat.
Rabid. What? How child in this.
You have 5 seconds. Mm. How in the world? And you realize you don't have any weapons. You don't have your racket for some reason. You have five seconds.
I was going to say I would use my racket.
Nope. Four.
I can't use my racket.
Three.
It's gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
One.
I'd throw the ball at it.
No.
The ball.
Isn't like that's going to help. I don't. Think about it, Becca.
She's throwing racquetballs at a rabbit bobcat.
There's nothing in a racquetball room like
right.
besides the ball and the
right.
racket, and
right.
neither of those things are there.
Right.
Right.
So, what should I do?
Just think about how practical it is. You're going to throw a racquetball at it.
Well, what should she do,
what
Grant?
Is that going to do?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
What you should do is think about this stuff ahead of time and not what? Play racquetball. Because
okay.
Ever?
That makes sense.
Ever. Because those racquetball courts, if you're locked in one with an animal, there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, my goodness.
I guess I would never be in that scenario
good.
If I never played racquetball.
Good. Good. That's what I mean. Don't.
I don't think anyone would ever be in this
don't,
scenario.
Because there's no way out of that. There's nothing you can do. Just you and a bobcat? No.
All right.
Mm-mm. Want to throw down the welcome mat to you if you are new.
Why are you throwing it?
Good question. I don't know.
Can't gently place it at the door.
I want to gently place the welcome mat in front of the door for you. If you are somebody, by the way, a lot of people who listen to a station like this or a show like this for the first time, they're like, I'm not sure if I'm welcome here.
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't raised in church or they don't know insider church culture stuff. I have to tell you something, and this can be offensive to people, but I'm just being honest about my own life. And Sherry's too.
Mm-hmm.
We don't totally get a lot of the stuff that goes along with church culture. What we do get and love is Jesus. He makes sense to me. I wind up reading stories about him, or I read the Bible with the Gospels,
mm-hmm.
sometimes just as a respite, just to get away from all the everything that doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he makes sense. I love how he draws people to him. I love they're like, don't touch lepers. Oh yeah, watch this. And he says, if you've seen me, you've seen God. This is God's heart for people. We love that. At any rate, if you feel like you're kind of a misfit, you don't fit in easily to church culture or the larger culture, we say welcome and please make yourself comfortable and absolutely know that you totally belong here. Occasionally, we actually, on this program, like to talk about this show because it's so either refreshing to people or annoying at first. And it really
There's
is.
There's really nothing in the middle, which is
no.
discouraging on some level, but.
It is. once again, yesterday, I got another note from somebody. I hated you at first. Hated.
Well, I got a note yesterday from someone that said they loved it and got it right at the beginning.
Well, that's good to hear.
See? There okay. we go. We balance it out.
Well, all we ask is that you give us a chance, understand what you hear is pretty much what you get. And I don't, like I just said,
mm-hmm.
and I'm fine with it.
If you sat with us at Starbucks, this is exactly what you would have. There's nothing else. There's no pretense here. There's no super smooth radio-ness.
No. And maybe there should be. Maybe we should raise the level of professionalism.
we're willing to consider that. No.
We resolutely stand for amateurism, and we're not budging. So anyway, give us a little bit of a chance. I know I sound like Kermit the Frog or Garfield the Cat or any number of cartoon characters. I don't mean to. But it's like having friends where they're not just like you, but you like the fact they're not just like you.
Mm-hmm.
Like a little bit different. He's a little odd. She's mm-hmm. a little odd. Mm-hmm. But we all like each other. We understand each other's roles and stuff. Well, we're very thankful that you're a part of things, but please do be patient with us and thank you in advance. I'm totally clueless about this. I've read books my whole life and lots of them. And I like books a lot. I was president of a library club.
It's impressive.
I don't know how to write acknowledgments. I've always seen acknowledgments in books.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how to do it.
Well, I think the hard part would be, who are you leaving out?
Right.
Was that the issue
well,
for
that,
you?
That is, but it was, yeah. But I realize I can't include everybody.
Right.
And it's not like a ranking of here's the important people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's hard. How long is it supposed to be? None of that. They just like write acknowledgments, okay? But anyway, I wanted you to know if you're listening, I try to acknowledge our radio listeners,
mm-hmm.
and you mean a lot to us, and that is not just corporate speak or whatever, like, well, yeah, everybody says that or whatever. We really mean it. Hopefully you pick that up, that we regard this whole thing as a relationship and not a one-way conversation where you have to listen to us.
No, No, it's friends.
That's the way we feel about it. So thank you for being patient with us, and thank you for putting up with the stuff we do. We're honored. And if you read the book, great, but you're in the acknowledgments. There is a new book called The Day I Met Jesus, The Revealing Diaries of Five Women from the Gospels. And it's a collaboration of Frank Viola, who's one of my favorite authors when it comes to the subject of Jesus himself, and a popular novelist named Mary DeMuth, who we have here on our little, what do you call it, program / podcast or whatever. Sherry's streaming a podcast. So, which is great because I love this book. I love the concept of it. I love how Jesus relates to women and how that speaks to people today. Mary, you said this actually, reading the stories again and concentrating on how Jesus interacted with women in his time changed you. In what way would you say it changed you?
Well, it seems really silly and simple, but to really come to terms with the fact that these stories were actual human beings who had problems and families and stress, and that as they met Jesus, things really did change for them. And they're not just stories. We think of them as just simply stories. We forget that they are actually human.
Mm-hmm. I love that, too. And that's one aspect of the book I think I appreciated the most as well, because it helps you to relate as an individual. I think in the back of our minds, we don't think that Jesus would want to have anything to do with us. We suspect it.
I think you're right.
Even if we know better, we suspect that.
Yeah, so when I write these very flawed women, and they're not saints, and I realize Jesus went out of his way to spend time with them, then perhaps it follows that he goes out of his way to spend time with me. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool.
That is amazing. What did you learn about, because you guys had to make this historically accurate and put it in proper context, even though you're writing a fictionalized account of the truth, what did you learn about the way women were viewed in the culture that Jesus is in?
Well, the Jewish culture actually had a fairly high view of women compared to the surrounding culture. So I think we always think, oh, they were bad and they didn't have a high view. They had a better view. But women were still quite marginalized, often viewed as property. And a woman couldn't make her way on her own without a husband. There was really a very strong sense that she had to be married, which made several of these women unusual because they didn't fit the mold of what you needed to do to be economically viable in that climate, in that country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the amazing things to me, too, is I think unless you're aware of that context, it's interesting the women that he picked out to have these interactions with. Because, like you just said, they're not typical in terms of how a culture would look and say, now this is how we want a woman to be, right?
Right. Especially, the woman caught in adultery, we don't often think, oh, she's the epitome of what we want to be. But here she is. She's being dignified and validated, and he was so tender and kind and sweet with her, and so... in a sense, he almost marginalized the critics and went out of his way not to marginalize her.
So when you look at these stories, was there one that jumped out at you as the most relatable or the one that affected you unexpectedly?
Yeah, I think the woman with the flow of blood was a really interesting one to write because she had a lot of things going on at one time. Not only did she have a chronic illness, but that chronic illness then caused her to be an outcast in her own culture and to be separate. And so you have two different kinds of problems going on, which I think women today find highly relatable. I have definitely felt like I'm on the fringes or I'm outcasted. And many women have had chronic illness in a way that never seems to go away. And I'm sure there are times when they're like, Lord, just heal it, please, or why won't you heal it? And so I think, Jesus intersecting that particular woman's life is meaningful to a lot of people.
Well, that's one of the things I've continued to marvel at is how we have a religious culture that picks certain people as accomplished or, I don't know, beautiful, talented, powerful. And they had people like that, I'm sure, in Jesus' time, but he opted for other people. Like that woman who touched him got precedence over everybody that was jostling for position. I really love that.
I do too, and it reminds me, even when I walk into church on a Sunday, it reminds me to keep my eyes wide open to the people that might be on the fringes. Because I think that if Jesus walked into our churches today, he'd find those people. He wouldn't like run up onto the stage and praise the pastor necessarily. He would find the person that's kind of shy and hanging back and talk to them. And I think that's such a cool and beautiful and accurate picture of how Jesus interacts with all of us. His kingdom is 100% upside down from what we think a kingdom should be.
Uh-huh. And it's so refreshing if you are a misfit. I can see why there are people hanging on the fringes going, I like this guy. He's allowing us in, and he's telling those people that they don't even get it. Just, I love that.
Yeah.
So when you engage in an artistic work like this, where you're trying to portray Jesus to people, do you find that you're drawn more to any particular aspect of his character as you do this? Is there anything that, like, now when you pray, you think about a certain aspect of his character? That may be a strange question.
No, I like that question. It's not an easy one to answer, but I would say I kind of think more about God seeing me or Jesus seeing me. You hear in the Old Testament that Hagar named God the God who sees, El Roy. And so now as I pray and now as I interact with God, I realize that he saw those women. He noticed them. He asked questions of several of them and interacted and broke almost every social norm to do that. And so if he does that with them, then he must do that with us as well.
If you were talking to guys, let's say I had a big group of guys here and we're like, okay, you just did this big project about Jesus related to women. Tell us, like, how should we relate to women?
I think it's not necessarily a question of how should you differently respond to women, but just humans. That every person has this part of God in them, meaning we were created in his image. We are image bearers of the Almighty God. And therefore, we all should be fascinated with each other and be humble enough to learn from each other, no matter what our economic status is or what our sex is or what our color is or what what nationality we come from. There is such a treasure in each person. And so my encouragement is to see the women in your life as a conduit of possibly the way God may grow you and teach you something.
Which takes humility. Hey, can you unpack the Mary and Martha thing for people? Because I hear a lot of different interpretations of what's going on with that. And I bet there's a lot of different, I don't know. You just talk about that incident where, was it in, good grief, in Bethany, where Jesus is telling Martha to be like Mary. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, so he tells Martha to chill out a bit, and he praises Mary for sitting at his feet. And my name is Mary, and so, but whenever I hear the Martha, Martha, you're worried and bothered about so many things, I actually hear my own name, because I'm the worried and bothered one. And yet what he really wants is this this beautiful place of really listening to him. And Mary, she really... What I love about her is she also balked convention, and she wasn't supposed to be in that room, and she was sitting at Jesus's feet, meaning she was in the position of a student of a rabbi, and women were not allowed to do that. And here she said, I don't care. I don't care if everyone talks about me behind my back. I don't care if I'm making a social faux pas. I am dying to hear the words of this amazing teacher. And I will forsake everything for the sake of hearing his life-giving words. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't work or that Martha was horribly wrong. It just means that Mary chose, in the moment, the most important thing, and that was Jesus.
You made me think about something, too. Yeah, exactly what you just said. Like, so he's the thing. He is the thing. Not the busyness that surrounds things that are in his name. Seemingly good things that we can always rationalize it. Well, yeah, I'm busy, 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 but it's all good religious stuff. Like, but he's it. Which is just a phenomenal scene to me. I'm glad you mentioned that too, about how they weren't supposed to be in the room. Even to this day, if you've traveled in the Middle East, I know you lived in Europe, but like that's still the case. You don't see the women. They bring the food to the door. I don't even see them. And that's
separate. That's exactly how it was. And so for her to do that, you can see how shocking that would be.
Yes, it is so interesting.
She didn't care.
The whole book is so interesting. I think it'd be really inspiring for people, especially women, but guys too, to just see how Jesus turns convention on its head. I wanted to ask you a couple artistic questions, if it's okay, because you've had a successful career telling stories. Is it hard for you to write? I mean, what's your process like when you sit down to write? Is that hard, or you just enjoy every second of it?
I write both fiction and nonfiction, and I find I started off my career as only a novelist, and so my best work or my best joy comes in weaving stories. So when I'm sitting down to write a story, it is pure joy. When I'm writing more to teach, it is a little more effort than just simply weaving a story. But I haven't really had, except for one thing in my life, I have not had writer's block or anything like that, because I really believe God's called me to this job to write these crazy books, and so I just out of obedience do it. And the more you do it, it's that statistic from Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. He says you become a genius at something by doing something for 10,000
yep.
hours.
Over and over. Yep.
So I've been writing for well over 10,000 hours. And so the more I do it, it's like a muscle, and the better and better and faster and more efficient I get at doing it. So every time I'm sitting down, I'm building that writer muscle. It gets easier and easier.
I'm glad to hear that. Because usually when I ask people that, it's like, oh, it's horrible. I sit down. I hate it, but I got to do it. It's discipline. So it's nice. It's nice to hear that too. I do think that's true. The longer you keep doing something, you'll build a muscle to do it. So as a discipline, do you just sit down at a certain time each day, or do you go somewhere, or do you have a pattern?
Yes. After a lot of reflection, I realized that my best creative time is in the morning, and so I dedicate my mornings to getting the most creative part of me out onto the page. I have an office in my home, and so that makes it very convenient. I don't have a very long commute. Makes for a little bit too much of a sedentary lifestyle, so I've got my little wristband on that tells me how many steps I haven't done today. But but yes, it's in my office.
So do you have points where at this point, because this is your living, you have to communicate truths about Jesus to people for a living? I do the same thing in different ways.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, I just wonder, have you, spiritually, do you find that to be an obstacle at times?
Yes. In fact, I've been going through a 2-year Herculean struggle with this, having to have ministry make money.
Uh-huh.
We don't have the luxury of me not making money, and so I have to. And it's been kind of a weird place. Like, I worry that Jesus is going to come over and overturn the tables of my book table, so to speak, because there's this merchandising going on, and that's really, really hard. So I don't know the answer to that. I've just been wrestling through it, and I just keep being faithful.
Yeah,
I try at least.
I totally get it. My first book is coming out in April, but I've worried about having friends and then suddenly going, like on Facebook, and then suddenly going, hey, buy my book. Like it's like inviting somebody to dinner, and then it turns out it's an Amway presentation. Like, it's
right. There's
nothing wrong with Amway, but I don't want to cash in on these relationships.
Right. You don't want to be that person who's always selling. And,
yes.
And, you know, you don't want to be the multi-level marketer that everyone runs from at church. And no one wants to feel like they're your project or that you're trying to sell things to them. So if you're worried about it, and I worry about that too, I think we're safe. But I think there are people out there that, you know, maybe cross the line sometimes. And that's where my fear lies.
I think it was Dallas Willard years ago. I saw him, and I was a young guy, but he said, you know, I didn't ask God for a platform. I asked him to give me something to say. And then he's provided me a platform. And I've always kind of thought, maybe if it just switches over to, I just want a platform. Like, it's clear that God is still giving you things to say, right? So you might as well say them. So it's so good. Thank you for writing this book. I know you collaborated with Frank Viola on that.
Cool. Yeah. If people want to pick it up, it's half price at parable.com. And there's a whole bunch of freebies they'll get if they do that. So that's something to mention. And there's a website for it, thedayimetjesus.com.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Cool, thanks.
God bless you. Great to talk to you.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To find out more about the radio show and Brant's new book called Unoffendable, just go to BrantHanson.com.